And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is on caffeine
is Scotty Hertz here, and I thought I'd use this accent because I heard that Princess Meghan Markle doesn't understand anyone that doesn't speak like this now. Did you hear this?
No.
Oh, you should see it. There's a bit of footage where she like has the accent. She's been like, what? She's been
She's gone full Madonna.
She's been
is what
a princess
you're saying.
For a week. I'm English.
No, she's gone full Madonna.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She should keep her American accent. Trump's gonna give her hell on Twitter. Probably.
Hey, you don't make fun of the third lead of Suits, okay?
Yeah, that's true.
She was also on Fringe for two episodes before she disappeared. Anyway, and I don't mean in a Fringe disappeared way. She just wasn't on the show anymore. But Open Source is a CFRU's political current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can listen to us live online, too. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading Open Sources on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today we're going to talk about the immigration crisis. No, not that one, but the one in Canada. We've got our own issues along our southern border, and we're going to dig into them. And then Trump went to NATO demanding more protection money, said that he got it, and then was refuted by everyone else at NATO. Now he's off to England, and then Putin, and then we will catch up with all that. And then finally, speaking of the UK, it was a politically tough week for Theresa May. I did not intend that to rhyme. It's always difficult with Brexit negotiations, and this is proving everybody's tricky, as everyone said it would be. So is May in real political trouble? But first, we're going to go back here to Ontario with, can we call it breaking news? It happened a couple hours ago.
Oh, yeah, I had to cram pretty hard because it was like, what? What happened? My phone did the usual bing, bing, bing. Things are happening.
Yeah, so the throne speech today, or the speech from the throne, I guess, depending on your definition. But so it's kind of like the official first day of the Doug Ford government, with the lieutenant governor reading a speech from the throne, and it made poor Elizabeth Dodswell say things like, "You shouldn't be forced to pay more and work harder to make life easier for you, to make life easier for your government. Instead, your government should be working harder, smarter, and more efficient to make life better for you."
Yeah, she's saying it, but you hear Doug Ford's voice in your head,
I
right?
Know.
Folks!
There's a baritone there that's missing.
Folks! Lots in here has kind of already been revealed. It may be a record for the amount of things that came out before the actual speech. So the speech is a bit of a whatever. But very necessary, obviously, to happen.
It's tradition.
Some of the things that I caught that weren't, pre-release, let's say. Pre-release. It's like they're leaking the album. Discovery Math. We were talking a little bit about this before the show. And I was like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, Discovery Math, canceled. And I was like, first of all, what is Discovery Math? And second, how does that save money? It's just like a little piece of curriculum. There is a piece of curriculum, however, or curriculum development that was canceled that I think is significant. There was some summer sessions that were supposed to happen right about now. They were developing the curriculum for Ontario for, you know, regarding Indigenous content, trying to tell students about the residential schools and a history of Indigenous people
and for Indigenous languages too
in this nation. And they were going to meet in Toronto for a couple of weeks, get together, and they said no, canceled. Sorry, sent out an email. I think there was one woman or participant that was already in Toronto, had come in from a very remote place, and they didn't mince words. They said, "Well, this cut is an austerity measure, so that's not happening." And I think the whole lead up was cut, cut, cut. And of course, also in education, sticking with that too, because there's lots, is the sex ed curriculum. We're going retro. We're going back in time.
We're literally going retro. But it's
to the 90s.
Yeah, I mean,
sex
that
was different then.
Kind of was. Well, but that was to be expected. That was a pretty big campaign promise. Not really to the people in particular, but to the social conservatives.
To the Christians.
Who propped up Doug Ford.
Sam Westerveld's parents. Among others. And him himself.
Yeah.
Who's now the parliamentary secretary?
For education. Yeah.
That's going to just give me... You see, Adam can see the pulsing vein in my head.
I can.
That I'm going to have for 4 years.
It's pretty legit.
Just because of that.
Because of the kid?
Yeah. Anyway, that was a bit of editorializing there. Sorry, I apologize.
It's fair. But yeah, education has been kind of been getting slapped around because there was all that stuff you said. There is the sex ed curriculum. Going back to 1998, you know, before Me Too, before Google, before Facebook, before sexting and all that. And then also they canceled $100 million that was going to go to school upgrades. There's like $16 billion infrastructure backlog for schools. So that $100 million wasn't going to put in even a 1% dent in that, but
and that's directly related to the cap and trade program getting smoked, right? Isn't it that money was going to come out of that?
I'm not sure about that.
I believe so.
But
so once either way, that has caused a chain reaction, domino effect throughout everything. Saying, but yeah, 100 million, as you say, it was like a 4 billion backlog, which is a little drop in the bucket, but a very much needed drop. And yeah. I happened to be in Toronto last weekend and saw some of the schools that I used to go by when I lived there, and man, they look way worse. You would think it's possible. Everything from weeding and just general maintenance is down. They looked abandoned, although they weren't. And I'm like, wow. Now they're going to have no money.
I mean, it's hard to see in Guelph because our schools are pretty, at least on the surface anyway. I mean, who knows what's going on in like the janitor's closets or in, you know, utility rooms or whatever. But I mean, for the most part, our schools look in fine shape. But yeah, depending on where you go, things are definitely more rougher than they are on the top. But I mean, that's $100 million gone. And it's like, well, I'm not sure that's what people meant by quote unquote efficiencies, by just like throwing away, you know, discovery math. It's, you know, and the whole
it doesn't do anything.
The whole sex ed curriculum too is they're undertaking an entirely new process that is either A, going to return the exact same consultations they got the first time about what the sex education curriculum needs, or B, is going to be cooked in order to appease social conservatives who don't like SEX in the CLASSROOM. And that's...
Sorry, I'm trying so hard.
But
that's about it.
That's the long and the short of it. And so, you know, they're wasting money there. They're wasting money here. They hired this guy, Dr. Oh, Lordy, I lost track of my notes. Dr. Feelgood.
I don't know.
Reuben Devlin, who was...
I know that name. How do I know that name?
He was, he's been appointed the chair of a new council on improving health care and ending hallway medicine.
Hey, buddy.
Which I'm pretty sure the PCs stole from the NDP, because I think I never heard that expression until Andrea Horvath started using it.
Oh, yeah, they, yeah.
But this is, he used to be the CEO of Humber Hospital, so that was the place where Rob Ford got initial treatment.
The place where they installed the robot as the greeter at the front.
Oh,
it's a true story. But anyway, that's something cool. Else. Yeah. Well, it sounds cool until you can't find your person.
And then, so this Dr. Devlin is getting a $348,000 a year salary. To put that in context, Kathleen Wynne made $209,000 a year as the Premier of Ontario.
Sounds a bit gravy trainy, doesn't it?
It sounds very gravy trainy.
And he's partisan as well,
especially,
right?
Especially when Devlin was the party people. President.
Yeah, so there's no patronage there. No other doctors in the province that could handle it.
Right.
Oh, boy. But
speaking of people not getting paid anymore, we got him, the $6 million man, we got him.
The beautiful thing about this is that we won't have to hear Doug Ford say the $6 million man ever again and ruin all my memories of Steve Austin.
But, it's like when he came out last night to announce that, or yesterday evening to announce that, like he was like practically orgasmic. He'd been told he wanted all expenses paid trip to Disney World or something. It was,
but like, I mean, you can guarantee there's something in the contract where he's going to get some money.
Oh yeah, right? He's going to get $8 million plus $1 million in other payments. So
just keep him on for a year.
Now he's the $9 million man. Awesome, good job.
You have to
Doug.
Spend $9 million to save $6 million. Now I don't know how much longer he would have been. How long the tenure is in the job? I guess it's probably indefinite. But the whole board is gone, right? It sounds like they. Back room, some kind of sit down.
Yeah.
Like the board, it wasn't they resigned in disgust. It was like there was, it sounds like they were maybe gently nudged. I mean, how could you function when that's the attitude to you anyway? And, you know, Right. I think most people are in agreement that $6 million sounds like a lot of money, and it is. And they say, well, we can't find the caliber of the people that we need to. Really? You can't?
Well, the CEO of Hydro-Québec makes like 300 some odd million or 300 some odd thousand. So, I mean, it's, I mean,
but he has a wine budget. I don't know. But anyway,
when you're just comparing apples to apples, it looks pretty sketchy, ridiculous. But at the end of the day, getting rid of Mayo Schmidt is going to save us all like 40 cents. Great.
So, I'm going to miss saying...
I can take that vacation I've always wanted.
Wonderful. I'm going to miss saying Mayo Schmidt. I'll get you, Mayo Schmidt, you $6 million man. Yeah, so other things. What did you catch before airtime there?
Oh, there's we didn't mention the White Pines, canceling that project. The White Pines wind power project, which is almost done and which is going to cost, in some estimates, $100 million over 10 years to undo.
Another billion-dollar power boondoggle.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So
wow. Such savings.
That's efficiency. Doug Ford did in 1 month what the Liberals did in 10 years. That's efficiency.
Yeah.
But, I mean, joking aside.
No sleight of hand there.
White Pines, the German company that's behind it is already talking about, you know, litigation. Because this project was almost ready to go. It was like, almost completed.
And do you think they could just, we'll let that one go because it's almost done. Like, you cancel it, then what? They're just abandoned and not doing anything?
And it's in Prince Edward County, which is not exactly, like, the poorest area of the province.
No. And I'm sure there's some good lobbying going on there from whoever.
Yeah.
Wine people.
Yeah.
Whining people. I don't know. Shouldn't say that because I don't know that for certain. But I think I mentioned it last week that my own opinion is that everything that's been happening seems to be lobby-driven, including beer and wine in the corner stores and in big-box stores. I know there's a definite effort from those groups to get beer and wine into the stores, and that's going to happen. And to be honest, I'm not completely against that. I think we've talked about this before. It's something that happens, like, in Quebec and the rest of the world, pretty much. I don't know what... It will lead to the bottom line, I suppose, because what's the LCBO up to now in terms of revenue for the province? Is it $3 billion? It's pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
So that will get chipped away as well. So that money has to come from somewhere. We don't know. It's one of those remains to be seen. And marijuana didn't seem to get a mention, did it?
No.
No. But what did get a mention that I thought was interesting that I caught before airtime was that they're going to establish a hotline for veterans, right? Did you hear this? They're going to have a dedicated hotline for military families. And I thought that was interesting because in a topic that's coming up, Doug Ford said, that's absolutely nothing to do with us because it's federal. Yet somehow, right, the military, which is a federal responsibility, they're sticking their beak into that. And I'm not sure. And who is going to be against a hotline for military people? Probably nobody. However, is it really within their scope? And how much will it cost? Should that not be a federal responsibility? Or is this that law and order thing? It's like, we love our troops.
It's pablum for a certain demographic. I mean, remember Ray Ferraro running here?
Mm-hmm. What?
Ray Ferraro on his rather meager campaign website had two whole posts about that one NDP candidate who, you know, talked about
anti-poppy,
wearing the poppy. Mm. And for a certain constituency, you know, that's red meat. You know, respect the troops, honor the troops, and I'm not saying the troops should not be honored, but yeah, this is red meat stuff for a certain constituency. So is cutting the sex ed curriculum. So is cutting wind power. So is going after green tech.
Yeah, I mean, is not one person well within the rights to have a different
opinion?
They're
just going
down
the list of special interests and check.
Oh, yeah. Special interests and lobbyists, I think.
And then the other piece of it we haven't mentioned is York University, which they're talking about reaching a deal.
Well, they're not reaching a deal. They'll be sent back, right? Or
that's where I was going.
Yeah, sorry. No, it's like...
Because
you know me on those topics. Like, no, they're not reaching a deal.
They don't have to sit as a legislature to... negotiate a deal. They do have to sit as a legislature to send people back to work,
which the NDP will vote against. But there's a
probably
then it's there's well, a ba- there's sure. a bounce though, right? There's a once and then it comes back again, and then I think it can go through. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah, some sort of.
But it's a moot point anyway because they have a majority, so it's, you know, they don't like even if everybody including the Green Caucus and Liberal Caucus, vote against with the NDP, it's still going to go through. But
yeah, I was going to say, what's a singular caucus? I don't
know. Cock-eye?
A cock-eye. Yeah, I better not go there.
Oh, and we CRTC should mention localish boy Ted Arnett is the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, we'll have to get him on, eh?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah. We'll work on that. Ted, if you're listening,
I would love to actually talk about the mechanics of Speaker of the House and what is involved in the training and stuff. So, yeah.
It's about time we had Ted on anyway. He's been the MP for 50 years.
Ever.
Right?
Yeah. At least 500 years.
Six terms?
27 terms, more like.
27.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I think you're right.
He's the Strom Thurmond of... No.
Oh.
No, sorry.
Now he's never going to come on.
No. I just meant timeline-wise. He's a record holder, right?
I don't know if he's a record holder.
Strom Thurmond?
Not Strom Thurmond. I mean Ted Arnett.
Oh, no. Well, he might be. No, I'm not.
But anyway.
Yeah, Ted, please don't take any of that, whatever. Just come on. Show you.
Let's move along.
Speak to the speaker. Yes.
Let's speak to the speaker.
Scene two.
So a lot of attention's been paid to what's going on the U.S. southern border, which involves separating families, and now the feeble attempts to reunite families, which, depending on who you believe, has not been going well. Canada has a lot of immigration issues itself, and we're going to try and go through as many of them as possible. And Scotty inferred just a second ago, there was that tete-a-tete with Justin Trudeau and Doug Ford last week at this time, where they're talking about, I guess, predominantly immigration, because I hadn't heard anything else coming out of that meeting, except Justin Trudeau coming out and saying, like, yeah, I had to basically explain to Doug Ford what is involved with immigration and refugee
and him
matters.
Turning to the camera like Jim on The Office going, bro? Like,
that is kind of what it feels like. That was a quick sort of faux pas from the Ford government, was saying that, you know, they're going to take a hands-off approach to anything that has to do with refugee resettlement. That's a federal jurisdiction, and they're not going to have any piece of it. It's going to be pretty tough, considering that John Tory is crying for assistance. There's a lot of refugees being housed right now in, like, university housing at U of T. Mm-hmm. I think York as well. They're going to need that that space for students in a couple of weeks. So what are they going to do? And you can't exactly wash your hands of this, no matter what Doug and company think.
No, and it's big bucks. I think Ford's number was $72 million for the province, and of that, Toronto is saying, I think, $64 million has been spent so far for housing refugees. Quebec are number one in the country with $146 million estimated spent. Now, there was a fund kicking around a bit for about $50 million was promised. And of that, I think Ontario was supposed to get 11. But of course, Ford is doing his, you know, line by line thing, saying it's nothing to do with us, which, as Trudeau had mentioned, is incorrect. You can't just completely wash your hands of the responsibility of people who are showing up on the borders. You need, you know, international law needs to be followed, laws of the country. Ford's language as well, they're illegal border crossers, which is sort of accurate, but not really. It's more like, I think the proper terminology is it's an irregular crossing. All that safe third country business, if you're coming from...
Right, but I mean, but the whole thing about, what was the exact phrase? Illegal border crossings.
They're burden as well.
That's ripped right from the big Trump book of phrases.
Absolutely. He didn't quite go as far as Trump with they're murderers, they're rapists, but it's kind of implied, I think. Yeah, I know he didn't say
it. Doug has some scruples. But.
No, well, maybe. Yet to be seen. It's day one, right? So.
it's problematic when we're already into that language, and... It's also problematic that I can't imagine why, but I was on Doug Ford's Twitter feed, and he was talking about guns, and this is an entirely different issue, but you have people like going like, oh, this is what happens with the Islamification of Canada.
And he said that?
He didn't say that. Somebody on his Twitter feed
said
that.
And it was never deleted or, I shouldn't really say.
But there was no response.
There's no surprise there.
So, I mean, it's...
This is where we're going.
That's the red meat stuff, right? So it's...
Yeah, because all those people from South America are followers of Islam, right? But anyway, then, yeah, no, it's... Yeah, they're not getting it.
But I mean, even, you know, shall we say more benign sections of our government, there was a report that criticized Canada for its immigration detention system, for its lack of transparency, a lack of international or national oversight. And this is from the Global Detention Project in Geneva. And it turns out that 16 people have died in Canadian Border Services Agency custody since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
371 children have been detained in the last 2 years. And by detained, like, it's not like it's in like these detention facilities, which this report compared to like a medium security prison.
Mm-hmm.
And although the families are kind of housed together, it's still these kind of like ad hoc jail facility where the kids can stay with the mothers, but it's hard for the dads to get access to the kids because the family room there where families can interact is for mothers and children only.
Yeah.
So if you're someone who's maybe coming here with your dad and not your mom, or because, you know, maybe mom's gone or for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're a father. You could be separated from your child indefinitely. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff we expect from, sadly, we expect from Americans now. But, I mean, it's happening right within our own borders, too. And I think we're not as aware of that as we should be.
And I think it's also adhering to the old-fashioned model where it's like, oh, you know, the mothers and the children and the dads, not realizing that or not appreciating that, you know, that's not the only family structure. You could be there with your aunt, and that would probably make things different as well. But yeah, the clock is ticking, as you said, on this. How people staying in college residences.
Mm-hmm.
8th of August is the when they have to go out. Where are they going to go? Now, I don't think we're going to see the kind of, you know, shantytown style like Calais in France. You never know, though. But they've got what, 2 or 3 weeks to sort it out. I'm thinking maybe military bases, which I think has been done in the past. They're sort of half empty at the best of times anyway. Not that I'm making that as a suggestion, but as what you'd mentioned there about people dying in border services, not to jump to border services defense, but I think there are quite a few people that come, will get there and be in rough shape just from the trek that they had.
Sure.
So it's not like, I don't think people should get the impression that, you know, they're being killed in custody, right? Which happens in a lot of countries.
No, it's not Arkham Asylum.
But it's you know, that maybe they're not getting the standard of care that they should or whatever. But I'm surprised I hadn't heard that number. It's actually very high.
But it's concerning because there's an inclination to treat people who are coming here in an irregular way and not treat them like people, but to treat them as like interlopers, as people trying to sneak in, as other, in other words. And so perhaps,
yeah, there's
an attitude in that in terms of their treatment, not necessarily that they're being abused, but just an attitude that, you know, you are not one of us, ergo we're not going to give you our best effort, in so much as, you know, as a Canadian born kid, you know, if they were brought to emergency services.
And it's funny how it all changes and how a lot of people forget where they came from, because we think about in the, you know, refugee situations in the past. I'm thinking post-World War II, when a lot of people came from, let's pick a country, the Netherlands, say, settled in Canada, Hungarian Revolution in the 50s, people came, Czech, same thing. Even up into the boat people from Vietnam and surrounding area in the 1970s. So what's happened since? Canada famously open arms, yes, come to this country and we'll settle you. Even more recently with the settling of the Syrian refugees, quite a few here in Guelph, all kind of a positive approach to it. But then there's this undercurrent where it's like that footage is being shown over and over. Somebody made a point of showing it to me, and I think it was from... or has been embraced by the rebel, but was originally on CBC, where there's that little outpost in Quebec, and then there's just people sort of filing through. It actually looks like a little provincial park. It's just a line at the border, right?
Yeah, it's like a hole in the brush, yeah, like at the end of a driveway.
It's the same footage over and over, but it's like, they're coming in, they're taking us services. And that stupid meme that's making the rounds about, oh, a retired person makes way less than any refugee that comes here and they get this and this, and this is absolute nonsense, right? Hmm. But yet people are eating it up. It's like, yeah, retired people. Yeah, the retired people that are on the cruise in the friggin' Caribbean are making less than some poor person that's, you know, trekked all the way through America because they can't stay there and they have to come to a safe third country like Canada.
Well, not to defend seniors, but I mean, there are seniors who struggle. Your points are taken.
But it's not, but like they're taking their seniors money away.
The seniors who are struggling aren't struggling because we're trying to help refugees.
The seniors who are complaining aren't struggling.
No, seniors, well, that's, I mean, that's usually
about it,
the
sharing
case.
It because cousin Bobby, it doesn't matter. So I don't want to go there, but...
But, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean,
nah, it's sick, right?
It's a fact that the median income of Donald Trump supporters were higher than the median income of Hillary Clinton supporters. Yet, there's a media personification of the Trump supporter as someone who hasn't worked in 5 years,
yeah,
like, and
Hill
struggling
people.
and there are those people who support Donald Trump, but the fact of the matter is most of Donald Trump's political support comes from people who are doing very well,
corporate people,
right,
not just money, but anyway.
And I found this interesting too. Immigration, refugees, and citizenship Canada. There was a Globe and Mail report that temporary resident visa applications, and this is for like reasons like tourism, young people coming here for school, people coming here for business, people coming here to visit family. The number of these applications put into IRCC has gone up by about 1 million in the last 5 years or so. But the number of refusals has also gone up. So it's gone up from 18% in 2012 for non-student visas to 26% in 2017. But for student visas, actually, no, before I get to that, and it's actually gone up further in 2018. So it was 18% in 2012, 26% in 2017. But for the first 3 months of 2018, it was 30%.
Wow.
Now for student visas, it's gone from 26% refusal in 2012 to 33% refusal.
Wow. So the vetting is getting pretty intense in that area then. It's not as if it's just they're letting everybody in.
These are just the cold, hard numbers. I mean, yeah, the refusals have gone up, and it's been commensurate with the fact that applications have gone up. The number of applications has gone up
as
well.
Right, so it's bit proportionate then.
What isn't, I mean, so these are the cold, hard numbers. What isn't sort of explained is why the refusals have gone up. Is it just because... it has to do with the number of applications increasing, or is there something else going on here? Like, you know, we're trying to stem the number of people who are trying to come here because sometimes people come on a temporary visas and,
yeah,
and
or maybe
make
more,
a life of it, shall we say.
Maybe there's more activity on a particular channel. So just briefly speaking of activity, it looks like in terms of solutions, the Conservatives and the NDP at the federal level are jointly calling for a special meeting of the Standing Committee on Citizenship and Immigration to review the adequacy of the response that is happening right now with asylum seekers and refugee seekers. So that's very Canadian. Let's have a committee.
Let's have a committee
and we'll decide. And then,
I mean,
meanwhile, the clock is ticking.
It's not a gong show like in the United States, but I mean, we do have very serious issues here that I don't think are being addressed because one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today was because it interrupts our very carefully cultivated image of being welcoming to people from abroad, and B, because this isn't as simple as families being torn apart, which is kind of an over the top reaction to immigration issues that we're seeing in les États-Unis. And and there's no figure like Trump sort of conducting it all. And that's a good segue to where we're going next with Senor Trump, who is making an outstanding impression as he travels abroad, as he always does. We're going to come back with Trump stuff and news from away in the UK. And it's a rhyming day here on Open Sources Guelph, which you're listening to on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio, and we'll be right back.
Was
what the hell was that?
Well, Krusty, I'll tell you, that was Tribe Called Red from their album The Great Seal, The Hallucination. That was a bunch of all-stars in there, and the reason why we're playing that is because Tribe Called Red are the headliners at Hillside Festival this weekend. We don't have a poster up for some reason, which is surprising because CFRU is one of the sponsors, and a lot of us will be there. I'll actually be in the broadcast tent Saturday from 12 to 2. Come on by. My guests at some point will be the Slow Can Ramblers. Anyway, that was Ally Nation with John Trudell, Lito Pimienta, who is playing also on the weekend, Northern Voice, and Tanya Tagak, who is a Hillside alum. So yes, going to be a busy, busy weekend.
That's a very synergetic track anyway,
and we'll see you there.
Yeah.
Don't you dare miss it. There you go.
Speaking of synergy or lack thereof, Donald Trump, one of his little big weeks. I mean, this is, you know, he likes to have like a full week. I think when things are kind of like not very busy, I think is when we get a lot of the craziness. But I mean, there was plenty of craziness this week anyway. But so on Monday, he announces Brett Kavanaugh is his pick to replace Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. But we're not going to talk about that because the next day, Donald Trump left for the NATO conference. You may remember Donald Trump's performance from NATO last year, where he did not uphold Article 5 and where he shoved another prime minister out of the way so he can get to the front of the picture. Just a classy guy all around, that Donald Trump.
But Donald, this year, the meme maker Trump. Yeah.
But this time he was on a tear about that 2%, how countries haven't committed to all 2% yet, even though the deadline for that is 2024. Some countries are delinquent, he says, delinquent in their accounts. Even though that's not even remotely the point.
No, because if I understand it right, the 2% is an aspirational goal, right? It's not hard and fast.
There are several layers of what's wrong with this. One is, yes, it's aspirational. It wasn't like locked and written in stone. The deadline is 2024 because this was a 10-year commitment. And it's for countries to invest in their own militaries to 2% of GDP. And then Donald Trump comes out this morning, local time, to do the wrap-up press conference, and he's like, it's unbelievable. I got them to agree to 4%. We're going to 4%.
Oh, I thought he just upped it. He's just like, yeah, it should be 4. I thought he was just saying stuff.
He said that, and then he basically announced that everybody in NATO agreed to now reach for 4%.
And then who stepped in and said, wait, hold on a minute.
Everybody. Yeah, like everybody. Macron said it. Trudeau said it.
Yes.
But, I mean, the United States doesn't even spend 4% of its GDP. It spends about 3.5%.
But they're top of the pile, aren't they?
Yeah.
But that, you know, that doesn't make it. Yeah, I heard him saying something today about we make the best weapons. America has the best weapons. We're buying all the weapons from us. I was like, what? It's almost like every time he opens his mouth now. Speaking of which, did you see this? And I didn't realize it because they had the gold plates at the breakfast meeting that they had, mm-hmm. where he just starts on about, yeah, Germany's in the pocket. Was that the pocket of Russia? Or what did he say?
Yeah.
Germany's controlled by Russia because Germany gets a lot of their petroleum and fuel from Russia. It's to the tune of 50%. But of course, Trump, just pulling the numbers out of the air, said it was 75. He's just like, so they get all this stuff. They
said it was like 60 to 70%.
Yeah.
And I went to the trouble of actually looking up the numbers. Russia is only responsible for between 50 and 70% of Germany's gas imports. But gas imports only make up 20% of Germany's energy. They still get 40% from coal, 30% from renewables, and 10% from nuclear. So basically, Russia gives 10%?
Right.
When you're looking at the map that way, a lot of Germany's gas comes from Norway. That wasn't just, you know, sort of audacious, but it was like embarrassing, and you could see that on the face of John Kelly.
Yeah, they were just
and Bailey K. Hutchinson, who are like, oh my God, what is happening?
Please bring the eggs. We can't handle this.
That was Sarah Huckabee Sanders' line, that John Kelly was just, he thought it was going to be a full breakfast and not a European breakfast of cheese and pastries.
Sounds wonderful.
Also known here as the holiday, as the Super
the Continental
breakfast. Yeah.
The, this is Trump's own people had that, oh, there goes drunk uncle again look on their face.
So. Yeah.
I don't know what Trump would be like if he did drink, but it was like...
We should be glad he doesn't.
He starts yammering. Because normally when they take a shot of something like that, but I didn't realize it was the working breakfast, but it's not like the mics are hot. They're just kind of sitting there waiting for the... I did notice Trump didn't have any orange juice either. That's probably some kind of conspiracy as well. Eh? I don't
know. It comes from fruit.
I don't drink orange juice. Could I have a Diet Coke, please?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Could I have two Diet Cokes? And an ice cream cone. But yes, and the comment from the president of the EC, the European Community, was it Donald Tusk? I keep confusing. There was a Tusk on House of Cards. Donald Tusk is a real person telling Donald Trump to appreciate his allies because you don't have that many.
No.
No, that's a pretty forthright statement, right?
Right.
Jesus. Look, Donald... I'm not sure if there was a mad tweeting following that statement, but I don't think he has time to tweet when he's doing the running around.
No.
Maybe the balloon baby has time to tweet. So I love the balloon baby. What a... That's a way to protest.
Yeah.
And he's got a cell phone.
It's...
Baby Trump.
Yeah, the thing about the allies is that... he doesn't have that many, but a lot of people who are smarter about foreign policy have been noting is that the allies are, they're investing more in defense, but it isn't so much because Donald Trump is, like, talking about protection money, talking about it like it's protection money. It's because there's more of a concern that the United States cannot be dependent on to come to the aid of an ally if they were to be attacked. And there's a lot of concern in Eastern Europe that, you know, Putin might get antsy again and decide to start annexing stuff. But they can't be 100% sure that the United States is going to have their back. And it's hard to blame them when Donald Trump will not, you know, say, you know, oh, we're going to uphold Article 5. Which guarantees one NATO member comes to the aid of another if they're in trouble. I believe only been invoked once before to come to America's aid on September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken on that.
That sounds right, yeah.
But, you know, you saw it in that, you know, that image of them all coming outside to get the class photo done. You see, like, Trudeau and Macron hanging out and, you know, Theresa May and Angela Merkel. Like, and then bringing up the rear is Donald Trump and Erdogan of Turkey.
Aww.
The two, you know, hardlining jerks who have, you know, authoritarian ambitions. Well, Erdogan is pretty much to achieve his authoritarian ambitions, but Donald Trump certainly has the same. So it's interesting that, you know, watching that, you know, along, shall we say, party lines, that Donald Trump naturally gravitates towards the other other person with dictatorial tendencies.
And this is the thing about NATO, too, is that it is a bit of a throwback. A little bit archaic in terms of its structure. It was built at a different time. The Cold War was on. If I understand it right, it was, you know, keep Russia at bay, keep Germany kind of in the loop and down to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Trump is echoing that when he says stuff about Germany and Angela Merkel's. That's just kind of sit there and, well, take it, sort of, I guess. But she seems to manage. But, because... Part of the thing, too, with the friends and you don't have friends or you're losing friends, just to sort of dip into the trade thing, is just, if you're just slapping tariffs on everybody left and right, these are supposed to be your pals and you're smacking them down. In addition, China, China's sort of off in China on its own.
Well, China's like sitting back watching the whole thing fall apart.
Yes, but they did the tit for tat tariff there's a tongue twister as well. It was like the $34 billion on China's, and China's just like, okay, $34 billion. Trump's actually talking about taking that higher to the tune of like $500 billion. So even if China was going to be considered a friend, it's probably not happening now. So, and when is it? We're probably going to have on the docket next week, Trump versus, or Trump loves, or Trump whatever.
Trump loves Putin.
Trump
the new
plays
system.
Chess with Putin. That's
concerning because they're going into a meeting where it's just going to be them and the interpreters. And so, I mean, what we saw today was, I think, what's concerning, where Donald Trump comes out and he says, oh, yeah, we're on our way to 4% GDP and investment in defense. And then everybody comes out and says, no, that's not even. And they had to have an emergency because he floats this thing. And then they have to have an emergency session in order to, like, surround him and, you know, try to, like, whoa,
the intervention,
whoa, whoa.
Eh?
Yeah, the intervention. And then he comes out and says, yeah, we had some tough times, and we're in agreement now. It's going to be tremendous. You won't believe it. And then Emmanuel Macron comes out and goes, no.
It's, no.
It's, you know, it's problematic when Donald Trump's in the room with a bunch of people who want to be America's friend. How problematic is it going to be when Donald Trump's in a room with somebody who's nobody's friend, mm-hmm. and sees Donald Trump very much as a useful idiot?
Oh, he had a heart attack or something. I don't know.
Because people like Angela Merkel, Macron, Trudeau, all of them want to drag Trump along into like trying to make this work. And even people in, you know, Trump's own camp, people like, you know, Secretary of Defense Mattis.
Yeah.
His former National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster. You know, these people are like, these are systems that work for us and allow us to achieve our national security ends worldwide. So they're invested in trying to make Trump work, or at least work for now, because, you know, the problems will exist once Trump is gone, too. How do you resolve all that even after Trump is gone? But Putin, nobody knows what Putin wants, what his endgame is, or how much he's manipulated Trump, or how much he has on Trump. These are all big questions that nobody has an answer to.
You've been a good boy, Donald. Here's the tape. Yeah, and you just know that somewhere in the States, in the U.S., there's like a Doctor Strange style boardroom where they're all sitting around, their heads are exploding, going, what is he talking about?
There's definitely someone in a bunker in the United States right now talking about choosing only the most attractive women to save in a Noah's Ark situation. Definitely when Donald Trump is president, you know, that's the priority.
Oh boy.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. What were we talking about today? Brexit.
More to follow.
I was looking right at the paper and I couldn't see it. Donald Trump's in the UK now. He's meeting with Theresa May. Oh my God, it is a rhyming day.
Hey.
That was a triplet.
We didn't call her Elizabeth, so that's good.
Yes, we didn't call her Theresa May. So he's meeting with Theresa May, and it's been a hard week for Theresa May because she had to go to NATO and put up with Trump, but then put up with him at home. But before that, she has this meeting at the Prime Minister's country residence with her cabinet to lay out a plan for how Brexit is going to be executed. And quite shrewdly, she basically held it in the middle of nowhere, so no one can like could quit right there and then, because there's no cell service and you couldn't take your government car back once you've resigned.
Checkers.
Yeah.
It's called checkers, not checkers as in chess, but shekels.
But as you know, after about 48 hours of relative peace, there were two big departures. David Davis of who is the actual Brexit secretary, resigned, and he was followed swiftly by Boris Johnson, he of the bizarre hairstyle, and the foreign secretary.
Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson. That's his real name.
As if he couldn't be more of a cartoon character.
Yeah. He should go by de Pfeffel. It's pretty cool, but yeah.
But they both resigned because they don't like the direction that Theresa May is going in. Basically, it's going to be as soft a Brexit as possible, and basically the UK will continue to use the EU's rules on goods and products, and may develop their own separate rules governing services. Theresa May has also talked about abiding by some of the EU rules and regulations, but not all of them. That the UK will sort of have like a Norway-like relationship, but will prevent European workers from traveling to and from freely, will not abide by EU Court of Justice jurisdiction, will not pay the annual payouts, and will have a veto option for any future new EU rules and regulations. That part of it is not exactly clear yet, all that. It's mostly just the economic end of the products and services, but that is too soft for Johnson and Davis.
Yeah, this is reflective of the Tory civil war that's going on right now. There's the hard Brexiters like Johnson and David Davis, and then the softer ones like Theresa May that are... I'd heard one today just before airtime, something that's been a white paper that's been presented that was suggesting that at least for the time, you know, early Brexit days or years, actually, that they were going to be a bit softer on students from the EU and people that are tourists from the EU. So it's going to be kind of like the bubble will be expanded. They'll be able to go to the UK and exist as if as if the EU regs are still in place. And again, people like, what's his name? It's like the children's book villain, Jacob Rees-Mogg. I don't know if you've seen this guy. Google Jacob Rees-Mogg and you'll be
Defense
like, what?
Against the Dark Arts teacher.
And he dresses up as a little boy just like he looks. It's really, really weird. Yeah, exactly. He looks like he's right out of Harry Potter, but like Slytherin house. It makes guys like that lose it because it's like, you know, what's the line? And Trump even used the Brexit is Brexit line today, which Theresa May has had read into the record in Westminster, like, hundreds of times she keeps saying it. And at one point, like Jeremy Corbyn, the opposition leader, got up and said, I thought she was going to say Brexit means Brexit. So maybe that's where Trump heard it, is saying it over and over again. Yeah, so it's reflective of that. And they also, if I got it right, they lost two more people, right?
Yeah, there were two like sort of lower backbencher guys who quit.
There were not the undersecretary. So they've lost four this past week that have stood aside. And, of course, the opposition types are saying, well, you know, are we going to have the election? I don't know what it's going to have the election. I think people forget that this is a hung parliament, a.k.a. a minority parliament in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if they piss off the DUP enough, who are propping them up, the party from Ulster, the Northern Ireland, if something happens there that they're not happy with, because they were bought for pretty much £1 billion worth of stuff, promises, that could fail. Because one of the key Brexit battle areas is Northern Ireland. How is there going to be a hard border between Northern Ireland and Ireland? Is there going to be a soft border? There's talk of letting Northern Ireland go, which would probably kick off, you know, the Troubles 2 or the Troubles 3 or whatever you want to call it. There's still lots of... But the clock's ticking, though. I was trying to remember what the actual deadline
March
is supposed
2019.
To be. I knew it was spring, but I wasn't sure.
Well, I mean, the entire thing is fascinating, and there's an interesting Reuters profile of Theresa May that's worth reading to sort of understand her mindset. What's interesting is Brexit is easy, figuring it out is hard. Boris Johnson said something to the effect of, the dream is dying. He said in his resignation letter, the dream is dying, the dream for Brexit, and that this plan from the Prime Minister will leave Britain in the status of a colony, which is kind of hilarious coming from, you know, the imperialist power of the 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries.
That's how De Pfeffel sees it, though, I think.
Yeah.
We've lost our
that is, I mean, but that's like straight from his resignation letter. But there were all these things up in the air, like Ireland, but also like Scotland. Who, you know, after the vote talked about like maybe having another separation referendum because they want to be part of the EU. They don't want to be part of a separate but equal UK or whatever. Businesses, things like Jaguar, Simeon's, Airbus are going into 10 Downing Street saying, hey, like we have to do business. And if this thing goes into the hardest Brexit possible, you can say goodbye to our businesses and you can also say goodbye to our jobs.
Let's go to Ireland. Yeah.
Bank of America is moving its European headquarters to Paris. So goodbye to those jobs and goodbye to that revenue.
Yep.
She has to walk a very fine tightrope, and then you have, you know, Hairdo Johnson, like,
he's the Joker of the pack, the fool, for sure.
Which, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then on top of that, you have, like, Jeremy Corbyn, watching him speak in Parliament, it's not hard to sort of see, like, there's an element of him enjoying this because, like, it was almost 1 year ago that election happened. It was over a year ago that election happened where he came out of nowhere to make that government a minority government, because people may forget that before that election, Theresa May called that election, they had a solid majority, not a huge majority in Parliament, but a solid majority. And she thought she was going to force an election and get an even bigger majority.
And got clobbered.
And got clobbered and, yep. And initiating the rise of Jeremy Corbyn. So, you know, he's good with no matter how this goes. And he's perfectly happy fronting the, you know, the Leave side. But what was interesting, and I heard this on Today Explained, the podcast Today Explained, had somebody from the BBC. And he said, you know, that when you look at the poll numbers, they haven't changed that much between 2015 or 2016 and today, mm-hmm. in terms of who's in favor of Brexit, who's in favor of staying in the EU. What has changed is the confidence in the government to make Brexit a reality, and there's almost no confidence at all.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be their undoing. I don't think it's going to be if a general election is called. I think it's going to be when, and that's the question. What will bring the government done? It might not even be anything Brexit-related. It may be something else. It was interesting you mentioned Scotland, because the last poll, my people, the last poll I saw, to address my people, pushing 50% back into that realm of, yes, an independent Scotland, strong possibility. And as we know from the vote, it was Scotland and our Northern Ireland had voted to stay. Mm-hmm. And those are the areas, well, not all of the UK will be affected by this, but they specifically wanted to stay. Now, I don't think IndyRef 2, as they're calling it, is going to come at light speed. I think they're going to wait and see what happens with all this. Because if the government does fall and they get a friendlier government with Corbyn and Labour, which is looking likely, then, you know, that's...
I mean, it wouldn't take much to push a few more seats over.
You could almost see them, you know, aligning with these. Even if it was indeed a minority, Labour and the Scottish National Party wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility.
There's a more comfortable alliance on the left side than there is on the right side. I mean, that was... We chronicled that when it happened last year, that, you know, trying to find someone to form a government with, that was tough for Theresa May, and they had to basically side with the few, you know, hard right whack
virtual extremists
to make it happen.
Yeah,
and I think we're seeing the limitations of that, because you are not going to get a hard Brexit, because the system just won't support it. Things are too intertwined. Business won't allow it. The Conservative Party is the party of business.
And that's probably the main point, is that business won't allow it, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You can have your fish and chips. You can have your keeping Britain British. But when it, you know, if the companies are gone, it kind of reminds me when in the 76 referendum in Quebec, when a lot of companies, specifically, I think the Bank of Montreal was one of the biggest ones, moved to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
Big office tower built, and, you know, they're still there, if I understand it right. And, you know, that's the vision of the future. And the hard Brexiteers, I don't really understand where... I mean, I sort of understand where it's coming from, but... and, you know, as to whether... I'm sure the Labour is fomenting a plan, if they don't have it already, for the either, you know, their own version, which would be the super soft Brexit, or running the referendum again.
Well, I mean,
the Brexit referendum. I mean,
this guy who was on Today Explained from the BBC pointed out that that's problematic too, because all it's going to do is really sow further divisions doing a rerun of that. Because it's I think it's quite the biggest problem is that, like, what is Brexit? to a lot of people, Brexit was just flipping their nose at the conservative hoi polloi. Brexit was, you know, about immigration. It was about jobs to some people. It was about, you know, keeping more money in Britain for healthcare. You know, Brexit means something different to everybody. What's I think is clear is that hard Brexiteers like Boris Johnson doesn't have an idea of what hard Brexit is or how it's done, because in his resignation letter there was no indication of like Theresa May should have listened to me and done A, B, C instead of what she's planning. They don't know how to balance all the varying demands on getting the right Brexit deal, and so what no matter what happens with the government, what we're going to be faced with at the end of the day, I think, is either a last-minute deal, some kind of extension, although that might be unlikely, or just a split and
yeah.
Britain's out, and all that stuff's going to have to be figured out later on the fly. And that's – I don't think any of those scenarios are very good.
No, because I think there was talk of a one-year extension, another white paper, but I mean it doesn't mean anything unless it's hard and fast. But
anyone can print white papers.
I'm looking at your book right now. It's all white paper.
It's true.
Adam A. Donaldson, one white paper after another. Mine are sort of beige color.
You know how many books full of white paper I have? It's ridiculous. Anyway.
Musings by Adam. That's what this says on the front.
It's actually this really cool cover.
Oh, yeah.
Of Star Wars villains.
Yeah, but that's, I like that one.
Anyway, you can stay connected to us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com, opensourcesnewswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. You can find us on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spanderbook.wordpress.com on occasion.
And I think a rerun of DJ Sounds Good to Me is at
correct.
The top of the hour. She is taking a summer hiatus. We do not take hiatuses here.
We never close.
We never close. We're open 5 to 6 every Thursday, but we never close. So we have a repeat of DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. from our open sources, and we'll see you then.